friends. It's December 18th, 2022. My name is Critch, and you are tuned in to Canadian Patriot Radio. Interesting times we live in. Always plenty to talk about. I just got back from a buddy's wedding, and this was his walk-in song, so I thought, why not open it? Open a show with one of these, or with this song. Okay, my friends, let's get into the nitty-gritty. The first one, or what I want to tackle in the opener, is the fact that Ron DeSantis has he's requesting a grand jury investigation into the COVID vaccines in Florida. This is, no matter what your thoughts are on Ron DeSantis, you've kind of got to get behind him on this, because they're doing the right stuff here. So let's turn it over to Laura Ingraham. She interviewed Ron DeSantis the other day, and I just want you guys to hear what he's got to say about this.
Our next guest has fought relentlessly against medical cartel's silencing campaign, which is why he invited people like Michelle and actual experts to join him in Florida today. And he's also calling for a grand jury now to investigate any and all wrongdoing in Florida with respect to the COVID-19 vaccines. Joining us now is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Governor, it's great to see you tonight. What did you learn today in hearing, again, these voices, many of them suppressed or people ostracized over the last few years?
Well, Laura, like anything, I mean, you take an mRNA shot, and the way to view it is, okay, what are the benefits and what are the drawbacks? And it seems like our medical establishment never wanted to be honest with people about the potential drawbacks. And so you showed a clip from Dr. Latipo down here in Florida and the analysis that he's done with people, particularly young men who've taken the mRNA shots. We, of course, had witnesses talk about their experience. And how are we in a situation? Yes, Florida, we banned vaccine passports almost 2 years ago. We banned the shot mandates for jobs and saved a lot of people's jobs. Nevertheless, throughout our country, you still have hundreds of universities in other states that are still mandating these boosters on these college kids, when any type of cost-benefit analysis would say the benefit from them taking the shot, as you alluded to, it doesn't prevent them from getting infected or spreading it anyways. The benefit is minuscule, but as Joe Latipo and other studies have shown, you know, there is a risk for doing it. So why can't our medical establishment acknowledge that? Why the deception? Why have they continued to do this for 2 years?
I want to read some of the reaction to your move today. New York Magazine's Jonathan Chait said, it's been very, very obvious that Ron DeSantis was courting the anti-vaccine movement. It's a case study in conservative movement's intellectual dysfunction. And similar nastiness from Vanity Fair, taking your authoritarian ambitions to the next level. He demonizes public health safety measures to score political points. Governor, is your goal with this roundtable today to demonize public health and safety officials?
Well, let me tell you this, Laura. The authoritarians were the ones that wanted to mandate the vax on people. I protected people from having that happen and made sure Floridians could make their own choice. The authoritarians wanted to institute a vaccine passport system, almost like a social credit system, so that people who dissented from this would be marginalized from society entirely. We rejected that and we banned it. So we were, from the very beginning, you know, helping people make their own decisions, but not using either the coercive power of the state or allowing big corporations to condition those choices. And so, look, at the end of the day, what we're looking for is to provide truth, to provide accurate data, and provide accurate analysis. And we had a great researcher from Denmark. You know, Laura, Denmark does not allow people under 50, unless they have pre-existing conditions, to get the mRNA shots, because they've analyzed it and said that the drawbacks outweigh the benefits. But they've also looked at all cause mortality. And the researcher found that, yes, in some age groups, there was a decline in COVID mortality after taking these, but there was then an increase in other types of mortality. So why have we not seen big declines in excess mortality since these things have been introduced? And so we have now a panel that we've created in Florida that is effectively going to function the way a CDC should function and basically do evidence-based medicine, take studies seriously that counteract the narrative, and be willing to ask questions and go where the data leads.
And Governor, on another issue, today in Washington, the White House was celebrating the president signing of a national legislation to protect both interracial marriage and non-traditional marriages, gay marriage and the like. There are a lot of religious conservatives and other traditional Americans who are concerned that this will end up being a severe encroachment on religious liberty and religious conscience rights. And I wonder if you might have a reaction to those concerns.
Well, I think they're valid concerns. I mean, Laura, was interracial marriage being even debated in this country? Nobody's talking about that. They're using the power, I think, of the federal government in ways that will absolutely put religious institutions in difficult spots if you have people that are so inclined to be very aggressive against that. And I don't think that there was certainly no need to do this. And I do think that those concerns were valid.
So I just wanted to let it play into the other I guess social trigger for a lot of people, which is gay rights and gay marriage. And then as you heard Ron DeSantis say, interracial marriage, that's never been an issue anywhere that I've ever even, I didn't even know that was an issue until American liberals decided it was one. But when it comes down to the shots again, the fact that he's got a, you know, he's paneling a grand jury to look into this in Florida, I mean, everybody across the world has got to be sitting back and be taking notes, because this will expose crazy, crazy numbers. And we're going to get into those numbers a little bit after the intro, but just to have an official investigation, just like you heard Ron DeSantis say, like the CDC and FDA are supposed to be doing, which they aren't, same as Health Canada and the Public Health Agency of Canada. They're not investigating. They didn't even take into account Pfizer's own clinical trials, which were devastating, is the only way to describe those. So we've got these supposedly health agencies that look out for everybody that aren't looking out for anybody. They're all bought and paid for by Big Pharma. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir and you guys are fully aware of that, but it's so many people still think that that's legit, like the FDA or Health Canada, that they think it's a legit organization. And it's just truly isn't. Like, if it hasn't been proven to you in the last 2.5 years that Health Canada has absolutely no concern for your health whatsoever, then you're living in a bubble. Like, you just live in an alternate reality. Okay, my friends, let's get this show started and we'll come back with some more shocking COVID vaccine numbers after the intro. Welcome, friends, to Canadian Patriot Radio, where conspiracy is not theory and political corruption finds the spotlight. We'll be right back. At CPR, we are committed to upholding Canadians' God-given rights to life, liberty, and freedom with all thy sons. Command. All right, welcome back, my friends. Let's stay on the topic of COVID vaccines, and the expose has dropped another bombshell. And the title reads, COVID vaccines linked to tragic loss of 500,000 young American lives, according to secret CDC and government data. This was written on December 18th today, like I said, by the expose. Now, it has one of those read-alongs, so let's let it read to us.
COVID vaccines linked to tragic loss of 500,000 young American lives, according to secret CDC and government data. As the COVID-19 vaccine continues to roll out across the United States, a disturbing trend has emerged. The United States is facing a devastating loss of life among its children and young adults. According to official figures from the Centers for Disease Control CDC, nearly 500,000 have lost their lives since the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, granted emergency use authorization for a COVID-19 vaccine. This marks a devastating 118,000 excess deaths compared to the 2015 to 2019 average. The year 2021 was a devastating one for children and young adults in the United States. According to data from the Centers for Disease Control CDC, there were 291,461 excess deaths among those aged 0 to 44. A shocking 60,000 more than in the previous year. The CDC's data reveals that this sudden and alarming increase in deaths was largely due to a mysterious rise in fatalities among children and young adults starting around week 31 of the year. Unfortunately, data published by the UK government suggests that this mysterious rise in deaths, which has contributed to the loss of 500,000 young American lives, is likely linked to the COVID-19 vaccine. This shocking tragedy has devastated families and communities across the United States, and it is imperative that we understand the full extent of the damage caused by this experimental injection. As we continue to study and monitor the data, it is crucial that we do everything in our power to protect the lives and well-being of all individuals. The implications of this devastating loss of life are far-reaching and demand our immediate attention. As the COVID-19 vaccine rollout continues to create uncertainty and concern around the globe, it can be difficult to access reliable and up-to-date data to understand its potential consequences. However, thanks to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, a 38-member intergovernmental organization dedicated to promoting economic progress and world trade, we are able to gain insight into the situation in the United States. The OECD hosts a wealth of data on excess deaths, including figures provided by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control CDC. Using this data, we can see the excess deaths among children and young adults aged 0 to 44 in the United States by week in 2020 and 2021. This chart reveals a troubling trend, with a significant increase in excess deaths in 2021 compared to 2020. Source data as the COVID-19 pandemic swept across the United States in early 2020, one might have expected a decline in excess deaths among children and young adults with the introduction of a vaccine. However, the official figures tell a different story. In 2021, excess deaths among this age group were significantly higher every single week compared to the previous year, with the exception of weeks 29 and 30. Then, in week 31, something drastic occurred, causing excess deaths to surge among children and young adults. Unfortunately, this trend has continued into 2022, according to data provided by the Centers for Disease Control CDC. While the vaccine was allegedly intended to provide protection and mitigate the impact of the pandemic, these figures reveal a concerning trend that warrants further investigation. Source data: the CDC's latest data reveals a disturbing trend among children and young adults because, according to the agency's figures, which cover up to week 40 of 2022, there has been a significant increase in excess deaths among this age group. While it's worth noting the last few weeks of data are subject to change, they paint a worrying picture of the impact of COVID-19 vaccination on the younger generation. But how does the situation in 2022 compare to previous years? To provide some context, let's take a look at the figures from 2020 and 2021. Source data: according to the data, there have been a staggering 7,680 excess deaths among this age group in 2022 alone, a disturbing increase from the same time frame in 2020. But it's not just this year that has seen a spike in excess deaths among young people. In 2021, the situation was even more dire, with a total of 27,227 excess deaths by week 40 following the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine. The following chart illustrates the official CDC figures for all deaths and excess deaths among children and young adults in the United States, both before and after the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine in December 2020. Source data: as the vaccination rollout continues, it's important to consider the potential dangers of these vaccines, particularly when it comes to children and young adults. And the figures above paint a concerning picture. They reveal that 2022 has seen a relatively similar number of excess deaths among 0-44-year-olds by week 40 compared to the same time frame in 2020, despite the latter being the alleged height of the COVID-19 pandemic and also including an extra 11 weeks' worth of deaths. But the most alarming figures are those related to overall deaths and excess deaths among children and young adults since the rollout of the COVID-19 injections. Tragically, nearly 500,000 people in this age group have died since week 51 of 2020, leading to a staggering 117,719 excess deaths against the 2015 to 2019 five-year average. These numbers raise serious questions about the safety and effectiveness of the COVID-19 vaccines. If the official narrative that these vaccines are safe and effective is to be believed, how can we explain the increase in deaths among children and young adults in both 2021 and 2022? The answer may lie in the fact that the official narrative is a lie. This is supported by evidence from the UK's Office for National Statistics, a government agency, which published a report on July 6, 2022 confirming the dangers of the COVID-19 vaccines. The report is titled Deaths by Vaccination Status, England, the 1st of January 2021 to the 31st of May 2022, and it can be accessed on the ONS site here and downloaded here. Table 2 of the report contains the monthly age standardized mortality rates by vaccination status by age group for deaths per 100,000 person years in England up to May 2022. We've taken the figures provided by the ONS for January to May 2022 and produced the following chart, which reveals the horrific consequences of the mass COVID-19 vaccination campaign. The chart shows the monthly age standardized mortality rates by vaccination status among 18 to 39-year-olds for non-COVID-19 deaths in England between January and May 2022. Source: unfortunately, the data reveals a worrying trend among 18-39-year-olds who have received partial or double doses of the vaccine. In every month since the beginning of 2022, these individuals have been more likely to die than unvaccinated individuals in the same age range. But the situation is even more dire for triple vaccinated 18-39-year-olds, whose mortality rate has worsened by the month following the mass booster campaign in the UK in December 2021. In January, triple vaccinated individuals in this age range were slightly less likely to die than unvaccinated individuals, with a mortality rate of 28.1 per 100,000 among the triple vaccinated and 29.8 per 100,000 among the unvaccinated. However, things took a turn for the worse in February, when triple vaccinated individuals became 27% more likely to die than unvaccinated individuals, with a mortality rate of 26.7 per 100,000 among the triple vaccinated and 21 per 100,000 among the unvaccinated. The situation only worsened in May, when triple-vaccinated individuals were 52% more likely to die than unvaccinated individuals, with a mortality rate of 21.4 per 100,000 among the triple-vaccinated and 14.1 per 100,000 among the unvaccinated. The figures are even more alarming for partly vaccinated individuals, who were 202% more likely to die than unvaccinated individuals in May. It's worth noting that the UK government has tried to hide the mortality rates for children, but a report from the Office for National Statistics reveals the disturbing trend among this age group as well. The following chart illustrates the mortality rates by vaccination status per 100,000 person-years among children aged 10 to 14 in England for the period of January 1, 2021 to May 31, 2022. And the figures serve as a sobering reminder of the potential dangers of the COVID-19 vaccines and the importance of further research to fully understand the risks and benefits. Source: the evidence is clear. COVID-19 vaccinations pose a significant danger to children. According to data from the Office for National Statistics, ONS, the mortality rate among unvaccinated children aged 10 to 14 is 0.31 per 100,000 person-years. However, among one-dose vaccinated children, the mortality rate jumps to 3.24, and among triple-vaccinated children, it skyrockets to a staggering 41.29 per 100,000 person-years. Unfortunately, the risks don't end there. Even when it comes to non-COVID-19 deaths, the data shows that vaccination is still dangerous. The all-cause death mortality rate among unvaccinated children is 6.39 per 100,000 person-years, and only slightly higher at 6.48 among partly vaccinated children. But following the administration of each injection, the rate goes up significantly. It's 97.28 among double-vaccinated children and a shocking 289.02 among triple-vaccinated children. This means, according to the UK government's own official data, double-vaccinated children are 1,422%, or 15.22 times, more likely to die of any cause than unvaccinated children. And triple-vaccinated children are an alarming 4,423%, or 45.23 times, more likely to die of any cause than unvaccinated children. The ONS's figures, which are age-standardized and rates per 100,000 population, provide definitive proof that COVID-19 injections increase a person's risk of dying. In other words, the COVID-19 injections are killing people. This is further supported by the secret CDC report that reveals 500,000 American children and young adults have died following the COVID vaccine rollout, resulting in nearly 118,000 excess deaths compared to the 2015 to 2019 five-year average.
As time goes on, the information that is available is even more horrifying than we had initially thought. Well, I guess we shouldn't say initially thought, but it's starting to catch up with some of the predictions that people we've been listening to since before the rollouts of these shots, what they were saying was going to happen. And now you've got correlating numbers between two major countries in the world, in the Western world, which is the UK and the US. It's truly horrifying that it's children now paying the price, right? Like, I don't know how people didn't see this coming. With just the adult deaths that you're seeing regularly now. I have a friend that is involved in the healthcare system in my area, and I just want to find this message for you, because a lot of people don't think it's happening here, but in reality it is. So I was told by someone that works in the healthcare system here that blood clots, heart attacks, stroke, advanced cancers, unexplained seizures are happening on a weekly basis now in a very small community where I live, like 500 people. 500 people, probably about if I had to guess, it'd be 70% vaccinated, 30% unvaccinated, would be roughly the numbers. And that's what they're seeing on a weekly basis. Likely one or two of each a week would be if I had to guess how that would break down. So when you think of that, out of 500 people to be seeing that twice a week, unexplained seizures being the number one, that I was told is happening in locally amongst vaccinated people. So we are no exception in Canada. Like, you know, you remember back when it was basically discovered that there was higher, there were like batches of these shots that went out that had higher mortality rates or were more dangerous. It's looking like it doesn't matter. Like, and we've even heard people speculate that, you know, if you got the shot, the first shots, like the ones that had to be cooled to like whatever it was, like a minus 70 or whatever crazy temperature it was to keep all the parasites alive in them, is basically the only reason you'd have to do that. But the people that got those are in worse shape than the people that afterwards they kind of slacked off and nobody was cooling them anymore. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. Like the crap is still in you. This horrifying garbage. And also don't forget that we listened to Todd Callender a few shows ago saying that within these lipid nanoparticles in these mRNA shots are pathogens. You know, the key one that he was focusing on was Marburg. You know, and don't forget, like, these people are still like they're marching forward with their global control agenda. Like they're right now implementing like travel passports, vaccine passports globally. Like the G20 just met and they all agreed that vaccine passports are going to go through in pretty much the entire free world. So with that being said, the fact that they're still marching forward with all these plans, even though COVID and the COVID vaccines and everything's been exposed and these numbers are available for everybody to see, they're still marching ahead. So that, what does that tell you, my friends? That tells me that they've got a second pandemic. They're planning a second one. Not to mention that Bill Gates met up with a bunch of people and they're running just like Event 201. They just did another one. And that the new one is a even more volatile virus than COVID that supposedly targets children, very aggressively targets children. Well, why would you have to do something like that? It's probably because your vaccines are killing the children. So you got to make it look like it's something else. But like I've said before in other shows, my money's still on Marburg. Anyway, all this information is available. So how do the globalists and their mainstream media puppets counter this information that is readily available for anybody who wants to look? Well, they come out with garbage like this. People who skip their COVID vaccine are at higher risk of traffic accidents, according to a new study. Oh my God. Let's read this, because this is even the title. When I first saw this, I laughed even harder than I just did. This comes to us by way of Fortune. And the story was written by Aaron Prater on... Doesn't give me a date. All it says is Tuesday. Okay. If you passed on getting the COVID vaccine, you might be a lot more likely to get into a car crash. Or at least those are the findings of a new study published this month in the American Journal of Medicine. During the summer of 2021, Canadian researchers examined the encrypted government-held records of more than 11 million adults, 16% of whom who hadn't received a COVID-19 vaccine. Let's just take a step back there and just focus on what this article just exposed to us. During the summer of 2021, Canadian researchers examined the encrypted government-held records of more than 11 million adults, 16% of whom hadn't received their COVID vaccine. Well, that tells you right there that the Canadian government is keeping records probably on everybody, and they're obviously keeping records on the fact if you're vaccinated or not. But that's horrifying that they've got encrypted government-held records. I shouldn't be surprised. I mean, yeah, you guys have heard me say that my information from Facebook was stolen in the Cambridge Analytica debacle. Well, they sold it to somebody. They still haven't told me. I even requested. I would be like, well, I want to know who you sold the information to. And you guys have also heard me say, I would bet you dollars to donuts it was my own government that bought it. And now you just look in articles like this where they just reveal that they're keeping records all the way down to your COVID vaccination on you. The government is. Let's carry on here. They found that unvaccinated people were 72% more likely to be involved in severe traffic crashes in which at least one person was transported to the hospital. than those who were vaccinated. That's similar to the increase of risk of car crashes for people who with sleep apnea, though only about half that of people who abused alcohol, researchers found. The excess risk of car crash posed by unvaccinated drivers exceeds the safety gains from modern automobile engineering advances and also imposes risks on other road users, the author wrote. Oh my God. Of course, skipping a COVID vaccine does not mean that someone will get into a car crash. Instead, the authors theorize that people who resist public health recommendations might also neglect basic road safety guidelines. Why would they ignore the rules of the road? Distrust of the government? A belief in freedom? Misconceptions of daily risks? Faith in natural protection? Antipathy towards regulation? Poverty misinformation? A lack of resources? And personal beliefs are potential reasons proposed by the authors. The findings are significant enough that primary care doctors should consider counseling unvaccinated patients on traffic safety. The insurance companies might base changes to insurance policies on vaccine data, the author suggests. First responders may also consider taking precautions to protect themselves from COVID when responding to traffic crashes, the authors added, as it's more likely the driver is unvaccinated than vaccinated. The findings suggest that unvaccinated adults need to be careful indoors with other people and outside with surrounding traffic. This isn't the first time that researchers have examined the link between behavior and vaccination status. Among young adults, a 2021 study published in the Journal of Biometrics found a correlation between self-reported risky driving and having skipped their flu vaccine. It examined the survey responses of more than 100,000 Canadians. Wow, just wow. That's the best they could do, my friends. That's the best they could do in response to the fact that we now know 500,000 American children or young adults have died as a result of the COVID vaccines, but all they can come up with is some fucking feeble bullshit fucking study saying that fucking just because you decided not to get your shots that now your insurance should be affected. And don't get me wrong, in the coming digital age that we're going into, that's literally what's going to happen. If you don't get your shots, you won't be able to renew your license. You won't be able to get your health care, your health card. You won't be able to do any of it. That's what's coming in the digital age that they're full tilt, full stream ahead trying to make happen. But I don't know, like just to see this retort, I guess, by the mainstream media when there's information like that on our side that we can, you know, basically say, like, this is your own data. you people are responsible for the deaths of 500,000 American children. I guess realistically, it's 118,000 above the normal excess mortality is what it really works out to. But that's horrifying and that's not acceptable, especially when you consider you take into account that shots in the past are pulled off the market if they have 50 fatalities. Now we're way beyond that. So far beyond that, it's not even funny. Okay, my friends, let's move off of that topic. Some of you may remember Eva Chipiak. She was one of the convoy lawyers, and she's basically uncovered a false narrative within the Liberal government when it comes to the Freedom Convoy. Just another round of misinformation. Anyway, I'll let her tell you, and then we can chat about it afterwards. If this works.
Hi, everyone. So I wanted again to go over parts of the submission filed on behalf of Freedom Corp to the Public Order Emergency Commission, and this part talking about the narrative that was created by the federal government prior to the protesters, the truckers even arriving in Ottawa. So I'm going to paste the submission, the page of the submission at the end of this video, and particularly I would take you, I'm going to take you to paragraph 79, where Carolyn Williams, and she's with the Ministry of Emergency Preparedness, that's Bill Blair's ministry. She comes up conveniently with an email that says convoy issues messaging. And this is on Thursday, January 27th. So let me remind everyone, the protesters and the truckers didn't get to Ottawa until Saturday, January 29th. So it's 2 days later. But what Ms. Caroline Williams had as of January 27th, and she said, I tweaked the lines to better capture what we're trying to articulate. Does the highlighted make a bit more sense? And she says, bullet point number two, threatening acts of violence and inciting hatred, as we have seen from the select few in recent days, is unacceptable and does not affect the views of the majority of Canadians. Weird. How can Ms. Caroline here talk about the threatening acts of violence in the last few days when nobody even got to Ottawa yet? Very strange indeed, isn't it? Goes on to say, we condemn all such hateful and violent rhetoric in the strongest terms. Of course, everyone does, because that's not what anything was about. It was about peace, love, and unity and government overreach. So this is how the government sought to deal with the protesters coming to Ottawa, is form a narrative and have a messaging. So if you look at the following paragraph, we say it is submitted that this is the narrative that was going to apply to the protesters by the Government of Canada upon the arrival of the protesters. It simply was not true. It was misinformation made up before their arrival. It was planned before the protesters arrived in Ottawa to tell Canadians and hear A, that there were threatening acts of violence, B, that made up was unacceptable, C, that Canada condemns that hateful and violent rhetoric. So, and we heard the Prime Minister say those words, so I'm going to paste this so you can see.
2 days before the protesters even got to Ottawa, they were establishing the narrative that we all heard. And now we've got the emails to prove it. Are you surprised? I'm not surprised. This government, so-called heavy air quotes government, has been the greasiest, dirtiest, most corrupt, money laundering, thieving, disgrace, racist, blackface wearing, child trafficking, disgrace, NDA signing, absolute disgrace of a, if you want to call it a government, of a criminal empire is what I'd rather go with. And now you got members of cabinet that are awarding $17,000 to their friends and nothing, not even a slap on the wrist, just to laugh it off and carry on. It is truly. You know, if that commission doesn't come up with the fact that it was unwarranted, the Emergencies Act was completely unwarranted, if that judge, what's his name? I can't remember now. Forget, it escapes me. But if he doesn't come up with the fact that they didn't need the Emergencies Act, just based on the fact that they had already dispersed all the border protests prior to even enacting the Emergencies Act, on that alone, that's well known. On that alone, there shouldn't be enough evidence to support the passing of the Emergencies Act, right there. So if he doesn't, if they don't, if the commission doesn't side with the people on this, oh boy. I think that the Canadians should just go right back to Ottawa. If they don't side with the people, I think everybody should pack up and head there and say, we want some serious justice. Like, it's crazy. Okay, my friends, we are going to move off that topic and we're going to get into the gun bans because these idiots, this criminal empire, this fascist criminal empire that is currently trying to ban our hunting rifles, and make no mistake, they are banning the hunting rifles. They get caught up so many times just by normal media in this country. There's two clips that I want to go through with you. Marco Smirk Guy Medicino got caught basically by a reporter two days ago, just not answering a simple basic question. Let's listen to this one together, because this is going into the evergreen provisions of the new ban, where they're basically going to ban anything with a magazine. Is what it is, like the way they've worded it. So listen to this, because this idiot can't even talk his way out of a wet paper bag now.
Minister, can you, this is a very technical question, so I hope you'll bear with me, but there seems to be confusion in the gun control, gun rights community around what the definition that you brought forward actually means. And it's particularly around the terminology for design, that it's the guns that would be prohibited.
The
would
magazine
be designed
capacity.
To have a detachable magazine of five.
For which it was originally designed.
Can you? But that's exactly it. So the legal definition that you proposed does not say originally designed. It says design. And so people think that it would ban virtually all semi-automatic centerfire rifles because all of them have these aftermarket magazines.
Yeah.
Can you please clarify if it's intended to be originally designed, i.e., the original design of that gun? And therefore, much more restricted. Can you please clarify that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you are touching on one of the real intricacies around the language which constitutes the evergreen provision, which is designed, the rationale of the evergreen provision is to move forward with a model agnostic approach around creating a zone that is going to capture prohibited assault-style rifles. And we think that by having this provision in place, two very positive objectives will be reached. The first is that you move away from cherry-picking models, which can be politicized, and obviously, as you heard me say yesterday, we want to take the politics out of this. We want to bring the temperature down and have a responsible, civilized debate, which is based on facts, as opposed to fear or disinformation. And the second thing is that by entrenching this evergreen provision into the law, as opposed to just using an administrative instrument like the order in council, it will have a more enduring and lasting effect, so that future governments who may have a different view.
Can you answer the question on the definition? Are you going to change it to say originally designed?
So I don't want to preempt the work of the committee, okay?
But what is your government's intention? That's the question. Is your government's intention to ban virtually all semi-automatic centerfire rifles, or is it to ban the ones that are more restricted through the additional word of originally designed?
Well, so again, I don't want to preempt the work of the committee. The committee is studying the definition. They're hearing from experts on how we have created those objective criteria. So for example, muzzle force, the bore diameter, the semi-automatic.
You're not preempting the work of a committee to say what your government's intent was, though. I'm asking if you can clarify the intent.
And we want to be sure that we get the language completely aligned with the intent. I'm describing what the criteria are, including the last one around magazine cartridge capacity to be eligible for the receipt by the gun. So that is precisely what we're moving forward with.
But is it originally designed or is it not? What is the intent?
I believe that the intent is originally designed and making sure that we get clarification about that. But I also don't want to preempt the evidence that will come forward by experts in law enforcement who have looked at these objective criteria to make sure that we get the primary.
And just on that
government
list,
have any,
I'll come back.
The
U.S.
Minister, on that list of fires, can you also...
I'll come back, Mary. I just want to give a chance here.
Are your lawyers looking at what to do if Alberta does invoke a sovereignty act to fight against the gun ban bill? Because it looks like they're about to do that in a few minutes.
Well, so let me say what I said in French a little bit earlier. In the first instance, Bill C-21's goal is to reduce gun violence with common sense policies like the national handgun freeze, red flag, yellow flag protocols, additional tools for law enforcement to go after hardened gun traffickers. There's a lot of good policy that has been informed by the advice and the consultation that we've had from law enforcement, from industry leaders, from Canadians across the spectrum. With regards to Alberta, we'll wait and see what they say, but it has been a resolved matter of Supreme Court jurisprudence that when it comes to the regulation of firearms, that falls within the the jurisdiction of the federal government. And we obviously cooperate with the provinces and territories on an array of public safety priorities, including with Alberta.
On the list, you said particularly that you're not cherry picking, that this whole idea of this quote unquote
evergreen to move away from that idea.
Yes. Except at the same time, you are taking a list that's in regulations, putting it in legislation, admitting it's done to constrain future parliaments, and you're adding more guns onto it. So you are still cherry picking at the same time that you're saying you're not, and that this definition is supposed to move away from it. Can you explain why?
Okay, so in the first case, there are lists of guns that have been prohibited for years.
Through regulations,
correct. And the idea is to not depart from that standard because those decisions, because they have been in place in some cases going back to the 1990s and then more recently in 2020. And so to depart from that obviously would create confusion. We don't want to do that. So those lists are there. They will be entrenched in the law and there will be clarity about that. There won't be any ambiguity about which guns are prohibited under those lists. If I could just be permitted to finish, because I'm trying to be responsive to your question, Marika. The point of the evergreen is to move away from that practice and to alleviate some of the pressure on officials and experts to revisit this every year, every 2 years, or you know, sometimes arbitrarily, even longer than that, and to rather have some more efficiency around how it is that we prohibit guns which are too dangerous to be in our neighborhoods, in our streets. And that is the point around creating those criteria.
I understand that. My question was, why are you at the same time adding new guns that don't even fall under this definition that you've created, that's supposed to be the clear legal delineation between what is allowed and what is not? You are putting the listed ones that have been previously listed into law, but you are also adding new ones to that list. And I don't understand why that was done if the whole point of a definition is to get away from the cherry picking that you just identified.
Yeah, no, look, it's a fair point.
And but why then? Explain.
I'm going to explain. We are taking some transitional steps by also having a list, but to move away, not overnight, not all in one fell swoop.
But why would
but
a transitional step become law? If it's a transitional step, you wouldn't put it in legislation.
To have clarity around those additional models which may, in our judgment, be too dangerous to be left in the community. That's why.
But they don't and need so, the definition that you've created.
Well, I've given you an answer. My point is that it is not a binary system, right? We want to create the transition, and by having a list which is very clear and transparent, and by also moving towards an evergreen definition, we are making the transition over time to alleviate the pressure on officials to consistently and constantly have to revisit it. Did you want to ask anything, or are you just here to watch?
So he did slip up and admit that they are going after the original design. So any gun that can support a high bullet magazine is going to be banned. That's he slipped up during that and admitted it. So you're also hearing these lying sacks say that they're not going after hunting rifles and shotguns. Well, let's get into another clip where their own guy admits that they are. This is in front of the commission that's trying to go through all this information that they're bringing out, and MP Bob Zimmer basically makes him look like a bumbling idiot. Because they are banning hunting rifles and shotguns. Let's get into this next clip, my friends.
The Auto Ordnance M1 carbine hunting rifle, will it be prohibited as according to this amendment?
I believe that is on the list, but I would have to check to be entirely sure.
Please,
it should be
check.
In the M1 carbine section.
I can assure you they're on the list. I'm just asking you to confirm it.
Yeah, so the firearm you mentioned, I believe, is the Auto Ordnance M1 carbine, and that appears on the list of Schedule 2 at paragraph 81, subparagraph F.
Good. Yes, I knew that as well. Let's go on to the next one. The Ruger number 1 hunting firearm. Is that firearm going to be added to the prohibited list if legislation C-21 passes with amendments?
The Ruger number one already appears in Schedule 1, and it's been on that list since May of 2020, so there's nothing new coming from C-21.
Yeah.
It's just being repeated in the schedule as opposed to being in the regulations. However, I would also point out that it's only those versions of the Ruger number one rifle which are chambered for a caliber which is capable of producing 10,000 joules of energy or more. It's listed in paragraph 95 of the existing regulations and of the proposed Schedule 1. Mm. So ordinary calibers?
I have to keep moving. I know some of my colleagues want to ask questions today, too, so I'm going to try and make the answers more concise. The fact of the matter is that the Ruger number one is a hunting rifle and it now will be prohibited.
The question, as I understood it to be, was about the Ruger number one rifle and whether it was prohibited. And my answer is that some Ruger number one rifles are prohibited, in particular those ones which are chambered for a caliber which is capable of producing 10,000 joules of energy or more. Versions of the Ruger number one rifle which are chambered for ordinary hunting calibers of the type that someone would use in Canada for hunting deer or moose, the version of the Ruger number one chambered for those calibers would not be prohibited. And in general, if it would be non-restricted.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. The hunting rifle, the Wesley Richards model 1897, is that firearm prohibited as a result of this legislation and associated amendments?
For that particular rifle, whether it's prohibited or not depends on the caliber it's chambered for. If that particular rifle is available in large African big game calibers, and some of which will exceed 10,000 joules, those versions of the rifle would be prohibited. Versions of it chambered for ordinary hunting calibers would not be prohibited. And I would further point out that this is no change from May of 2020.
And I just would acknowledge, and you would, sorry, I won't ask what you would say. I'll just say what I say. That is a hunting rifle, and it now will be prohibited as a result of the legislation. I'll go
only,
on to the next.
Only those versions which produce.
But it's still a hunting rifle that will
energy.
Be prohibited.
The Wesley Richards rifle is available in calibers which exceed 10,000 joules of energy. Those versions would be prohibited. Versions which are chambered for ordinary hunting calibers would not be prohibited, and in general would be non-restricted.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Let's go on to the next hunting firearm, the Winchester Model 54. Will that be prohibited as a result of the passing of C-21 and associated amendments?
The Model 50, Winchester Model 54 is not on any of the schedules. There is the potential for it to be impacted by the Evergreen Clause, however.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. The next hunting firearm, the Parker breech-loading shotgun, is that going to be included in the prohibited list based on the passing of C-21 and associated amendments?
The Parker is a brand name, and they make a variety of shotguns. And as was the case with the other firearms you mentioned, some of them are available in large calibers which exceed 10,000 joules energy. Those versions would be prohibited. In the case of the Parker, which is a shotgun, it's more likely that the shotgun would be available in 8 gauge. And with a barrel of that size, it would exceed 20 millimeters and be prohibited for that reason. But Parker shotguns, which are chambered for ordinary hunting calibers like 10 gauge or 12 gauge or 20 gauge, etc., would be unaffected and would remain non-restricted.
Once again, though, another hunting firearm being included in the prohibition list. Another question, the Cunkari Farquharson 4 shotgun, will it be included as a result of the passing of C-21 and associated amendments?
It's the same situation where only those which are than 10 gauge, so 8 gauge being the most common, which would exceed 20 millimeters and fall within the already existing paragraph 96 that's been there since 2020. So most of the shotguns would be unaffected, but the high energy or the large caliber ones would.
So once again, another hunting firearm being included.
It is a hunting firearm, but it's only prohibited in certain limited circumstances.
Yeah, still a hunting firearm, though. Let's go to the next one, the NX-18, and it's a hunting rifle. I have an image of it right in front of me. It's actually a semi-automatic shotgun. It's a 410. Will it be, it's a hunting shotgun. Most of us have used 410s for grouse hunting, etc. Would the NX-18 semi-automatic 410 shotgun be included as a result of the passing of C-21 and associated amendments?
And again, I have to point out, I don't have every make and model memorized. I don't recall whether that shotgun has a detachable magazine or a fixed magazine. If it has a fixed magazine, it's unaffected. If it has a detachable magazine, it might be, but I'd need to look up the particulars for that particular shotgun.
But certainly has the capability, I think, and that's what's concerning many Canadians watching today. If it has the capability of having a detachable magazine, they will be included in paragraph G of G4.
Now, detachable magazines for shotguns is relatively uncommon even these days. So it's more likely that a shotgun that's designed for hunting would have a tubular fixed magazine and therefore would be unaffected.
The thing is, though, this is where the confusion is, and you're an expert. I know quite a bit about firearms, too. There's even confusion amongst us of whether it will be or not. And the capability, I think, is the key language. And if something's capable in the future of being deemed a certain way, this is, again, affecting a firearms and hunters across this country. So another firearm to ask you about. The Ruger PC Carbine Takedown Hunting Rifle, will it be included if legislation C-21 and proposed amendments passes? Yes or no?
First of all, I wouldn't characterize the PC Carbine as a hunting rifle. The PC... My recollection is it stands for police carbine. It's a small semi-automatic carbine that has a standard magazine size, I believe, of just under 20 cartridges, 17 perhaps. I'd have to look up to be sure. But as such, it would meet the evergreening definition in that it is semi-automatic. It fires a centerfire cartridge. It has a detachable magazine, and the capacity of that magazine exceeds 5 shots. So that firearm would be captured by that definition if it were to come into force.
On and on and on and on and on it goes. But they basically admit in their rhetoric or trying to explain away what they're doing, what they're actually after. They don't want you to have the ability to have anything over or a detachable magazine anymore, or anything over a specific amount of shots. Well, that's just complete garbage. That's the only reason that you want to limit your ability to fire rounds is because you don't want people, regular everyday people, to have the ability to shoot back at you. It has nothing to do with hunting. Who cares if a guy's walking into the bush with a 30-shot clip? Who gives a fuck? It doesn't affect anybody. Odds are, if he's a good hunter, he's going to pop one round and save the other 29 for the 29 years to come. So it's just really coming down to function. They're banning everything that has the ability of taking them out when they start doing really extreme things. I don't think there's going to be a Canadian from coast to coast to coast that is going to turn in any firearms to this fucking fascist government anymore. I think they've gone too far. The AR-15s, we always knew they were going to come for those. We knew they hated those guns. They're absolutely terrified of them. Don't tell me. Don't even ask me why. I mean, these are a 223 semi-auto, scary-looking gun. That's it. They'd actually probably do better with gun owners if they just came out and said it's scary-looking. That's why we're banning it. Because then we'd be like, okay, well, at least it makes sense. Because now you're just confusing it. And all of this rigmarole that they're putting forward in banning specific guns and not specific guns, well, we've already gone through Agenda 21's disarmament program. It doesn't matter. None of this fucking matters. They're going to ban everything. So once they're at this point where they're banning, they've got all your semi-autos, they've got everything, they've got you right down to, you're going to be single bolt action shot, like rifles. That's going to be what they're going to allow you to have. And then eventually they're just going to ban ammo. So what does it matter? And they're going to ban presses and everything. You won't be able to load your own. Everything will be gone. Like, look at what's going on with ammo already. Like, you can't get... I hunt with a 300 Win Mag. I haven't been able to get 300 Win Mag ammo for 2 years. You can't find it anywhere. Why is that? Because a 300 Win Mag would put a hole through a person like you wouldn't. Like, freaking huge. That's why. But I'm just thoroughly disgusted. We all knew this was coming. We all knew it was going to happen. I'm glad that the provinces are pushing back, and you're seeing them at least stand up for their people. Like I've previously said, when it comes to provincial jurisdictions, if you don't stand with your hunters and your sport shooters, you're fucked. And I'm swearing a lot because this just pisses me off. All this is going to do is explode the black market, and like you, I'm going to be looking for unregistered firearms from now on in. Because who wants to deal with this crap every time you've got a liberal government? The only firearms I will be buying in the future are going to be unregistered firearms. So there you go. That's what this is going to do. Because I don't need a fascist liberal government that just spent 2.5 years discriminating and segregating me, telling me that I don't have the right to own whatever fucking firearm I want. I'm not even going to hear it from these fucking fascists. Sorry. As you can tell, I get hot under the collar about this one. But it's not up to them. And it's funny that they think that it even matters. That their opinion even matters. Because there's going to be no Canadian turning in any gun now. Because they've gone too far. So what are you going to do? Are you going to go to every single place that has a hunting rifle with a magazine ability and kicking down the doors and trying to get those guns? Good luck with that. Do you know how many police you're going to get murdered trying to do that? That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. All right, my friends, we better stop this one because I could rant forever about this. And not to mention, let's just keep ranting for a second. Not to mention this same government that spent the last 2.5 years discriminating and segregating and excluding you from society because you expressed your right to bodily autonomy. This same government, on December 4th, 2017, I believe, brought enemies of your country into this country and reintegrated them within this country. And now they're trying to take your guns away. That, my friends, is treason. Are you going to allow a government that has created or that has committed like capital treason in this country, still punishable by death, mind you, are you going to allow them to disarm you? No, you're not. None of us are. So that's why I think you're seeing, at least in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Yukon, and New Brunswick, you're seeing the provinces side with their people because it's a death warrant for them. If they go along with these gun bans, they will be voted out so quick that their heads will spin. You know, you got a lot of sports shooters even in the cities that are not down with any of this. So, like I said, that black market's going to explode. It's going to explode, my friends. You watch. Like, it's going to be... Like I said, I won't be buying any registered firearms in this country ever again. Ever again. I'm not dealing with this crap ever again. They will have... In my mind, they have no right now. They've shown me that they do not have the responsibility or the ability to govern what property I have at my place. It's none of their fucking business from this point moving on. And with that being said, they from this point on, moving on will have no idea what I own from this point on. I will never buy another registered firearm in this country for as long as I live. Period. All right, my friends, let's shut this one down. If you want to reach out to me, it's Canadian Patriot Radio. That's the Facebook one, Canadian Patriot Group. Facebook is Canadian Patriot Radio. There's a message button there. Use that one. Let's talk about firearms. The email is CanadianPatriotRadio@gmail.com. Telegram is t.me/CPR_2, and the website is CanadianPatriotRadio.ca. Thank you so much for tuning in again, my friends, and until next time, in all thy sons, in all thy armed sons, command. For joining us for another episode of Canadian Patriot Radio. CPR is not filmed before a live studio audience. If you like the show, friends, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share us on all your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.